This episode of Literary Treks is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Literary Treks, our dedicated Star Trek books and comics show. I'm Christopher Jones, and joining me this week, once again, as he always is, but especially happy this week, coming off of his weekend in Dallas, where he got to meet Karen Gillan, it's Matthew Rushing. Matthew, anyone who has seen your Twitter stream this week and clicked to look at your avatar a bit larger just knows how big your smile is.
Chris, it was so much fun. A friend of mine and I went, and she is the person who actually got me to watch Doctor Who in the first place. And so she is a big fan as well. And so both of us, obviously paying to get our picture taken with Karen was so much fun. We had the best time, and I'm pretty sure that we both came out of there and just looked at each other afterwards and were jumping up and down, you know. Oh my god, it was just, yeah. And she really was the nicest person ever, and so that was really neat too. Actually got to see her in a Q&A with Sylvester McCoy, one of the previous doctors, and they were fantastic together. She did so much fun. We had a really great time. It was such a good experience. And so I was really glad I got to go. You know, unfortunately, as I heard you and Char talking about on the Ready Room, I actually did miss the Star Trek Continues premiere, which I was disappointed. I was in a swag line that was pretty long. And unfortunately, I was like halfway, you know, in the line. I was like, I'm not getting out of this line So that was disappointing. Also, I was kind of kicking myself because I just missed the opportunity to hear Carl Urban. I got there just a little bit too late on Sunday, and the place was like, you see those things where things are just so squished, you know, like you squish something in your hands, it's like coming through. That's how it looked like with people, but in that room to see Carl Urban. And so unfortunately I missed that as well. But
well, it's too bad you missed that, because after our discussion last week, I know you were wanting to see him up close so you could picture him with long hair to see how he compared to the female counterpart of Dr. McCoy from the comic that we discussed last week.
You know, I did, but I didn't get to do that. So instead, I just was on the convention floor, you know, with everybody selling things. And I just saw some pictures of Carl Urban. I kind of pictured him with longer hair. And I felt like that the comic had done a pretty good job of getting a female version of Carl Urban. So,
Well, that works. All right. Well, let's jump into the show here. We just have one news item today. We're going to kick off the show with our segment, Judge a Book by Its Cover. We need theme music for this, don't we, Matthew?
Yeah, we really do. It's kind of like... I don't know.
Judge a book
by
its cover.
We judge a book by its cover. We judge a book by its cover, because that's the only way I know. That's the only way I'll read it.
All right. So, Matthew, whose book are we judging by its cover this week?
This week, we're judging a book by its cover, and it is John Jackson Miller's newest Titan book, which, exciting for him, his first Star Trek book as well. So welcome to Star Trek, Mr. Miller. And this is his e-novella that he's got, Absent Enemies, that's going to be focusing on Riker and his crew there on the Titan. And, well, it's the Titan on the front with the classic Titan cover as well, with the big Titan letters up the side.
Which looks a lot like the Titan comics, right?
I think it does. I'm trying to remember what the Titan comics, but this
The Titan comics do have this down the side.
But the first run of Titan books, the first few of them, this is what they look like as well. And so, and it's just a picture of the Titan. So flying away from Earth, it looks like. So
the first thought is that because this is an e-novella, they're trying to save money. You know, they're not going to be printing it. And so they don't want to actually commission new artwork, just, you know, complex artwork for the cover. However, that might not be it. What's the title of the book again? Absent Enemies. You would expect to see the enemies on the cover. They're not there.
That's right. You just have the Titan. And unfortunately, the Titan is not Tobias's beautiful render that they had on Poison Chalice for James Swallow's book. This is much more like, just a generic model of the Titan. So, which is disappointing.
Yeah, it's just like a, it's almost like a comic illustration.
Yes.
Right, versus the more photorealistic.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, great. It's still not a bad cover. It's not a bad shot of the Titan itself. It's actually a nice beauty shot.
It looks good.
And it just makes me excited to read this book. So, and then it comes out in a couple of weeks. So I'm glad that we'll be getting it, and it'll be fun to dive into and then get a chance to talk to John.
What if you get to the end of it and nothing really happens and the enemies never show up? They're just absent for the whole story.
That is a tough thing. I mean, I don't know. If there's absolutely no enemies in the book, maybe it's about just our Titan characters then. Who knows? Or maybe it's they seem like they're absent, but they're not. They're just hiding.
That could be it. So, like the Tribble King from way back, early days of the Ready Room, the Tribble King is actually Shatner's toupee.
Yeah, something like that.
It was on his head the whole time. Mm-hmm, he saw everything that happened on the ship.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the only thing we have today in news. And before we jump into the feature, we're going to talk about IDW's Spock Reflections comic. I'd like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks online. They have more than 150,000 titles for you to choose from, and they're adding new titles every week, especially as new books come out. Unfortunately, not new Star Trek books, but most books that come out these days, they have an audio version that comes out at the same time as the hardcover or the paperback if the book is not going to be in hardcover at all. And you can grab those on Audible, and it's a great way to read more new material without having to have all the time to sit down and read, because it's, you know, really hard for most of us these days to set aside the amount of time for reading that we would like to have. But they do have a lot of Star Trek books on there. And today, because we're going to talk about Spock Reflections, I wanted to recommend the Vulcan Soul trilogy. They have Exodus, the first book in the Vulcan Soul trilogy, on there. And that is written by Joseph Sherman and Susan Schwartz. It's narrated by Boyd Gaines. And it's a great way for you to jump in deeper into the Spock story and the Vulcan story.
Yeah, and those were good books too as well. So I enjoyed those. It's been so long since I've read them, so you would have to bear with me. It's been years. That's a great series, Chris. I'm glad you chose that one. I think people would like it. And the great thing is it's something that even if you don't stay with Audible, you still get to keep the book for free. So nothing better than having a great Star Trek audiobook in your library.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of these Star Trek books are abridged. And one thing I like you said, you haven't read this in a long time. Mm-hmm. I like to go back to books that I read a long time ago and then just listen to even the abridged version, because it just refreshes my memory. I can enjoy the story that way as well. And I like hearing it narrated. So, as Matthew said, you get a free audiobook of your choice, and you can keep it if you decide not to stick with Audible after the trial, but you're gonna want to stick with Audible. If you're listening to this podcast, you're definitely going to want to stick with Audible. And the way you get this free book is just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up. Choose the book, and you get a 30-day trial. And doing so helps us bring Literary Treks to you every week, because Audible is a sponsor, and they help us, you know, pay for all the costs associated with bringing the show to you. So again, go to audibletrial.com/trekfm, choose a Vulcan Soul, whatever you want to choose there, and enjoy. And thanks so much to Audible for helping us bring the show to you this week.
Well, Chris, we're going to be talking about today Spock Reflections, which is a 4-part comic miniseries that IDW did in July of 2009. That's when it started, and it was promoted as a prequel to the Countdown comic that they did, which was a Star Trek tie-in to Star Trek, the new JJ picture. And so, and this was Spock going to be flashbacking and thinking and contemplating on the events of his life following Star Trek Generations. And I thought it would be interesting to talk about this because, yeah, it actually takes place all in the Prime Universe and doesn't have anything to do with one, Countdown. It doesn't reference any of that material. And it also doesn't reference anything in the JJ universe. And so it actually is it's a really good look at just the idea of Spock dealing with the death of Kirk and just the toll that it takes on him. So just kind of first impressions, Chris, what did you think?
My very first impression was that the artwork is beautiful because on the first few pages that you get here when you've got this Orion ship flying and they're passing through this nebula, and then you've got this weird looking alien, but he's standing against the glass and you see his reflection. All the coloring is just absolutely beautiful. But as for the story, you know, it is a pretty simple story, even though it's 4 issues. It's basically just summing up Spock's journey from when he first meets Kirk, and Kirk's jabbing him about being, you know, too logical and mechanical, and then who Spock is. This is the connection, though, I think, for the Abramsverse, is who Spock is in the cave when he talks to Chris Pine's Kirk. And you can tell that that's the point where he's progressed even far beyond the Spock that we see in The Undiscovered Country, which I really like, and I always point out the discussion that he has with Polaris there. You know, the Spock in the cave in the 2009 film is much, much wiser still and is much better at balancing the logic and the emotion and looking back at his life, you know, and what the people meant to him. And that's pretty much what this entire comic leads us to, not to that scene, but to that Spock.
Yeah, Chris, I think it is really interesting when you think about this comic and what it's doing for Spock and kind of giving you a picture of a guy who in this comic is coming back from Romulus. He's gotten a message from Picard that's telling him that, you know, Kirk has come back, even though they thought he was dead, and then died again, but this time for real. which, well, talk about being the bearer of bad news as Picard.
I hope that, I was going to say a piece of paper, but of course it was a digital transmission. I hope it all fit onto one pad, because if you needed two pads for it, you get to the bottom of the first one and it's like, oh, Jim's alive, he's back. And then you pull the other, oh no, he's dead.
Yeah.
It's like kind of cruel of Picard that way, wasn't it?
Exactly. He's dead, Jim. He's dead, Spock. Exactly. It would have been terrible. It really does, I think, give us a picture of, you know, who Spock is as a character internally. And I think that's really what this whole comic is trying to do. What is it that kind of drives this character internally? What has created this character from somebody who we've seen for so many years? And what I thought was most interesting, Chris, is that he's coming back from Romulus. He's been working on his unification project for years now. And you realize that, you know, Spock, having spent so much time with humans, I think has probably given him all the tools that he needs to be very effective with dealing with Romulans. Because Romulans are much more like humans in general. And and so, in fact, at the very end of the comic, I really felt like, okay, where they had brought me with Spock was helping me see why he might be successful in the future as to bringing, you know, Romulans and Vulcans back together.
So this is sort of a variation on the ancient Vulcan proverb, only Nixon could go to China, only Spock could go to Romulus.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you could, that could be a new proverb for Star Trek. And so, yeah, it's a really is a beautiful comic though. You open that, this first page up, and it's fantastic. And we get Spock and he's traveling back and he is riding with, I think, maybe the most annoying Saurian ever. Who just keeps pestering him with questions, to which Spock barely answers throughout this whole comic, which I think is really funny.
Well, what's funny is that, so they're in this big, I started to say it's a cargo bay, but it actually does have seats lining the walls that are kind of built in the walls, but it's this really, really big space. So Spock could move anywhere, but of course this Saurian's going to come sit right next to him no matter where he moves, right? This guy is like the guy on the airplane that you sit next to and you just want to read a book or sleep or something, and you've got that person next to you who just wants to chat. Even though they don't know you, they want to chat for like the whole 5-6 hours of the flight, right?
Exactly. Which I think it's interesting, you know, he keeps asking him questions and it is kind of interesting because they use it for the impetus of Spock to kind of daydream,
right?
And kind of get to a different place. And so the first daydream he kind of drifts into is transporting to the Enterprise B and meeting Captain Harriman.
Well, I wanted to ask you about this one because, you know, we talk about Harriman fairly often, and I know that you like Harriman better, I think, than most Star Trek fans I know. When I got here, and maybe it's because we did those Captain's comics a while back and we did the Harriman comic, I feel like we've talked quite a bit about Harriman. And then when I got to this, I thought, oh, they're going to do the Harriman thing over again. You know, the Harriman, oh, I suck, I lost Captain Kirk thing that Harriman does. But what did you think about it here in this story?
You know, I thought that we have seen it a little bit before. But I also thought that he is not quite, he's not quite as bad as we've seen him before. I feel like he's somebody who's still thinking about what's happened to him. He's still kind of contemplating what's happened to him, but I felt like he's a little bit more confident than he is in some of the other places we've seen him. I mean, he obviously, you know, I think he's thinking to himself and he says this, you know, it's kind of a hard thing to live down the reputation of your first time out on your ship and you lose, you know, somebody like James T. Kirk off your ship. It's kind of hard to live that down. But I think it's interesting to see him in this comic talking to Spock and the conversations they have about, that Spock reminds him, you know, you did save 47 people and it wasn't just Kirk doing that. It was you too. And the idea that I really liked the last part here where he just repeats what Kirk told him about, you know, the risk is part of the game. You want to sit in that chair and how he feels like he learned so much from Kirk just in the few, you know, maybe his hour that they probably spend together.
You know, he makes the comment here to Spock, and he says, what your friend must have thought of me, his replacement, captain of the Enterprise. And of course, Spock consoles him and says, I am confident the captain bore you no ill will. But when you watch Generations and you see Kirk on the bridge, don't you get the impression that Kirk is looking at him and thinking, like, this goofball is the captain of the Enterprise?
You know, I get the feeling like, you know, Kirk is, he's just so used to being in charge, you know,
yeah.
And he knows what to do. And he has, I mean, even though it's only Scotty and Chekhov with him, you know, they have the shorthand, you know, that Harriman and his crew don't have yet. So when I think about it that way, I think this is a new captain with a new crew and a brand new ship where half the things aren't delivered till Tuesday. None of that's his fault. You know,
right.
Kirk has everything on him. You know, he has 30 years of experience and two people he's worked with for most of them. And so, of course, he's at a disadvantage. And that's the way we're supposed to see him in the movie. So I never held anything against Harriman. It's not his fault. It's like Han Solo in The Empire Strikes Back, where he's like, it's not my fault. They told me they fixed it. I trusted them to fix it. You know, so
that's right.
It's the same thing.
You mentioned Chekhov and Scotty being there with Kirk and no one else is there. One thing this comic does address is why wasn't Spock there? You know, Harriman says, we missed having you at the christening. And then we find out, well, you know, Spock was off doing his thing and that's why he wasn't there. So just a tiny little nod, like, okay, yeah, no, it wasn't a contract thing or anything like that. Spock was really busy.
Well, it makes sense to me that, yeah, you know, there was a reason that Spock could be there. It's fine. You know, he's got other things to do.
Sure. Now, as we move on through here, I really, really want to have Spock's house on Vulcan. Is this not the coolest house you've ever seen? It looks like it's like 10 times bigger than any house that I've ever had.
It is really cool. It reminds me a little bit of the architecture you see to T'Pol's house when they go home in Home. It has some of the same looks to it. I feel like they drew some of the artwork and the design of the house a little bit from that. So I thought that was really neat.
Sure.
And I love this little piece here of him dreaming about, you know, him being at home. And, you know, I love what Amanda says to Sarek. You know, nobody knows what it's like to be Spock except for him. You don't know what it's like. I don't know what it's like. You know, because Spock is the first child of at least that we know of in Star Trek, of a Vulcan and a human together. And so that he is a very unique specimen, a unique person. And this, the argument that they have here is so awesome between Spock and Sarek. And my favorite is when Amanda goes, I will never get used to a Vulcan scolding.
Right.
It's just so funny because it's not as, I mean, we, you know, we wouldn't take it as a scolding at all, but it's just, it cracks me up.
I know Sarek tells him, well, Spock tells Sarek, your decision seems illogical. Therefore, I do not feel bound to abide by it. And Sarek says, be that as it may, you will abide by it. If not, you leave me little choice but to consider courses of punishment. Take that, Spock!
Ooh, you courses of punishment! Oh, my goodness, yeah. Oh, man. Well, what I really like here is that, you know, Spock runs away again in the middle of the night. And Sarek does the whole dad thing where he's like, all right, I'm going to go get my son and it's not going to be happy. Maybe the only thing that he'll respond to is corporal punishment. And he finds Spock in the wilderness and, you know, Sarek's about to fall. Spock saves him, which I thought was really kind of nice. And they have this great moment together and Spock just kind of confesses, which is very un-Vulcan-like, the struggles that he has, what it means to be him and how he really a lot of times doesn't feel, you know, at home on Vulcan and with other Vulcans because they all look at him differently and how difficult it is to be there. And so they have this moment together and I think Sarek kind of finally starts to understand Spock and that he has had a lot to deal with. it's harder for him to deal with it because his emotions are probably more to the surface than most Vulcans because he's part human.
Right.
And
well, and it highlights the turmoil mm-hmm. of Spock right. being torn between two worlds. And, you know, I mean, it's something I can associate with as well, because I'm kind of, you know, for much of my life, could split between two cultures where, like, you don't feel like you really belong to either one of them. You're somewhere in between. And that's how Spock feels, you know, so much of the time. And this highlights it going all the way back to his childhood. One thing I did want to point out here, Matthew, is that it seemed inappropriate for the discussion that was going on. But when Sarek decides to leave and go look for Spock and he heads out the door, mm-hmm. you see the final frame on that page. It's just the door and it's Amanda's ass.
Yeah.
You've got the comic ass shot in here. Yep. It has to be in. Is that just like a standard rule for comics that you have to have that?
Yeah, I think it's a standard comic IDW thing because we always do get a nice, just ass shot of one of the women, whether it's Starfleet officer or Spock's hot mom. So
right, it's always there. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm glad we did not get one of the Saurian though.
Yes,
on the Orion
ship.
That
would have been really disturbing. I think that what is really neat and nice about this comic is this idea, and we were just talking about it, you know, Spock giving us the ability to kind of think through how most of us can feel out of place. And a lot of times we don't feel at home because of things that happen in life and things that go on. And it's nice to see it portrayed this way. And give you an opportunity, maybe just for a little bit, to feel understood by a fictional character. And so I do like this, and it does really kind of play into this idea of that understanding of his dad starts to kind of create the Spock that we're going to know later on. It's a good starting point for the comic. And it's like we said, this is not a big action comic. There's nothing like that. It really is kind of very much a character piece for the character of Spock. And so I like that they start here with one, first the loss of Kirk the first time, and then this kind of reflection back on what it was like, the struggle it was to be human. And, you know, what's really interesting is Spock's frustration of being half human, half Vulcan, and seeing like he's not fitting in actually correlates to Harriman and his feelings of being inadequate, not fitting in, not being the right man for the job. You know, everybody probably looking down on him. So I thought that was really interesting as well.
Well, we'll move into the second issue now, and they're back on the Orion ship. And, you know, he's being chatted up again. And then he has a flashback. And this one's pretty short, but it goes back to the motion picture time period on the Enterprise when Spock encounters Chapel again. And now she's a doctor. And it's just that uncomfortable moment where, like, you know how Chapel feels about Spock. And it's unrequited. But I think what I got from this scene, as short as it is that you feel that all that time Spock had some sort of feeling as well that he kept bottled up and never, ever let it out. And he still has never let it out, but here he's just kind of thinking back to how he felt internally when he was around Chapel and that particular moment. And like maybe he wishes he had handled this moment differently.
It is interesting, and they have this moment, and they're talking, and he, you know, tells her congratulations on completing her medical degree and becoming a doctor. She says thank you. She kind of touches him on the arm, and then he kind of gives her that sideway look of why are you touching me? I'm a Vulcan. Yeah. And she says, I hope you've been well, and then she walks out of the turbo lift. And as she's walking away, and she obviously can't hear you, he says, I hope you've been well also. And it is very much that idea that if Spock had been different, I think if he had been older, you know, the older Spock from, say, you know, like the Undiscovered Country, or maybe even Star Trek V time period, he might have been more willing to actually have a relationship with, I think, with Christine. He just had not gotten to that point yet. And so I do think that there's a sadness in him for not being ready for somebody as I think he thinks back of her as she's pretty wonderful. He wasn't available emotionally, which, man, how many men have probably had that problem with women?
Right. Well, then we move back to the Orion ship, and there's some turbulences that are going through a nebula, and the Saurian is going to freak out, but doesn't bother Spock because he's used to being on a starship. Of course, Saurian doesn't know that at this point. And then we get a flashback to pre-TOS with, he's with Captain Pike. So it's the Enterprise, but it's, you know, the what we would have seen, I guess, before the cage. I mean, you know, we don't exactly, you know, you jump from the cage into later when Kirk's there. So it's the time anyway when he's on the ship with Pike, and they've been sent on this secret mission to a facility where Starfleet is trying to develop another way for you to get around without having to scatter your atoms all over the universe.
Yeah, and they are working on this very interesting, like, dimensional, what is it? They're working on a portal, like a subspace portal, so that you would be able to move.
Well, it's like creating wormholes, little stable wormholes, right?
Which obviously we know is quite difficult unless you're a prophet, and so
or an Iconian,
exactly. And so they are creating this, and Spock is telling Pike how dangerous he thinks this is, and is quite worried about it actually. And then something goes wrong as they are demonstrating this. Yeah,
something just went wrong.
I know, shocking. I
cannot imagine that happening.
So something's going wrong, and all of a sudden Spock disappears because a portal appears under him, and he falls into it. And lo and behold, which this is just kind of awesome, but Pike just jumps right into the hole right after him, as if like it's the most normal thing in the world to do. So way to go, Captain Pike.
And then they end up on this, they're either on a volcano or they're on a mountain near a volcano. There's all this lava going on the ground. There is a volcano erupting nearby. And Spock's about to fall off. And then Pike comes through the hole and helps him up. And it just echoes what happened to Spock as a child, where Pike is where he was and Spock is now where his father was. And he pulls him up.
Yes, definitely. And they have a great little discussion there just about, you know, thank you. And then they talk about the fact that this probably wasn't the wisest idea for Pike to do, to jump through and try and save him. And
you know, what was weird to me right here, though, is I started wondering, like, do these portals, do they somehow take you through time as well? Because the way that the comic is illustrated, the hole opened in the sky. So they actually like fell out of the hole, which, good job on the landing, Pike, you know, to land there and not injure your legs or anything like that. But they're watching this portal close, and then it goes pop. And then they're like, well, that's just great. And Pike says, the Enterprise will help us find a way out of here. And then they walk down the hill, and there's the Galileo shuttlecraft is sitting down there. It's like, did the Enterprise know that's where they were going to be? How far did they travel? I don't know. It felt like the Enterprise knew where to find them even before they called them.
Yeah, that's a good point. They don't actually address it all in the comic. It's just kind of a strange moment.
It's a jump in time. Like, they called the Enterprise and some time passed and then they walked down the hill. But the way it's done in the illustration, it just feels like it's happening right there on the spot.
Yeah, yeah. It does feel like that there's been some sort of time shifting going on. Yeah. It's not terrible. But I think it was really interesting, you know, seeing the lesson that, you know, for Spock, who he became, it wasn't just something he learned from
Right.
From Kirk.
Well, because after this, when they get back up to the Enterprise and they have a meeting and...
Staff meeting. Spock is,
yes, a staff meeting. And apparently they've had an upgrade to the viewer screen at the table here, because that's like a massive jumbo TV compared to what they usually
exactly.
have.
Exactly.
But anyway, Spock is telling Pike, you know, thank you for saving my life. And, you know, I owe you one. Pike says, just do your job well. That's all the repayment I need. But yeah, it's a learning moment for Spock, right? This is yet another moment where he's starting to learn how humans view a loyalty to friends and even the, well, it just how they express their love for a friend.
Yeah.
Which is something Vulcans just don't get.
Exactly. Right? And I think it's just really interesting because Spock is still very much struggling with that whole idea of being a Vulcan and being a human and not understanding how to combine those two things and being raised Vulcan. So feeling like that's the only part of him that's, I guess, legitimate in some way, which is very interesting. You know, he always feels like, at least we see him feel like that it's the Vulcan side of him that has to be dominant, which is always a little strange to me that like why that has to be the case. And yet that's just how he's chosen to be. And yet,
well, I think that when you're growing up on Vulcan, that's how it is. Like whatever culture you find yourself in, the traits that you have that are of that culture need to be the dominant ones for you to actually blend into the society. But once you leave, then that's different. And since Spock left Vulcan, once he's out, once he's in Starfleet, once he's with humans on the Enterprise, yeah, I think he should have been more willing to let those things out.
Yeah.
To let the human side of himself out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's an interesting thing because you see the same thing play out with T'Pol too in Enterprise and how she hangs out with humans all the time and for so long and it really does begin to change her. So we get a little bit more with the Saurian and they're hanging out some more and he asks Spock why he's coming back and he had received some disturbing news, he said, and then we get the scene of Spock on Romulus being delivered the news from Picard that something has happened and then to be continued for issue 3. And they finally get to the starbase where Spock can grab his next transport, which I think is interesting because it's just the starbase from the JJ verse.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, that's sort of the one connection that you can see here with the Abrams verse, and this is sort of a tie-in to that as a prequel to Countdown, is that, yeah, I mean, this is full-on ringed Death Star, I don't know what this thing is, starbase that they have in the JJ.
Yep, this is a Deep Space Station E5, so it's midpoint between Sector 001 and the Romulan Neutral Zone. So,
yeah. What do you think about this Abrams verse? This is the thing that I think as a space dock design, this makes more sense than what we have in the Prime Universe, where you would actually have all these rings protruding out from a central core so that more ships could dock. But I'm so used to the starbase that we see in the TOS movies that that's just what I like. Because, I mean, think how much drama would be missing from Kirk stealing the Enterprise and the search for Spock if instead of having to open the garage doors and sneak out, all they had to do is just pull away from a docking ring here.
Yeah, it's very true. There's something about that design that's really, it's aesthetically beautiful. I mean, it just fits really well within the TOS movie era. It looks really good. It's obviously ginormous because it's big enough to fit, you know, Excelsior class, you know, Constitution class starships. And, eventually the Enterprise D in So
they had to widen those doors a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I think they did, because a big old Bertha was having trouble getting through there. but yeah, so yeah. Now the difference here is that space dock orbits Earth. This space station is in the middle of freaking nowhere. So
yes,
it makes a little more sense.
Yes, but in the JJ movies, the same design is orbiting Earth.
Yes, yes, it is. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to why it's here, other than it's a connection with the JJ movies. And so
they need a
nice
big flashing sign up on top, you know, like a diner, like a truck stop.
It says like Al's Diner or something on top. Yeah. You know,
Alf's Diner.
Yeah, get your burgers here.
Your cat burgers.
I love that there's an Andorian on this page too, just random Andorian. So it's important.
Who's a captain, apparently.
So Spock gets his transport, and before he gets the transport, though, he has a flashback to being back on Vulcan between the end of the original series and before the motion picture, where he's come home to Vulcan to complete the Kolinar training, and he runs into T'Pring. His ex-wife, you could call her.
Well,
I mean, ex something. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they call him, in, but I mean, it's an ex. It's not just a. I mean, it's more than an ex girlfriend, but it's less than an ex-wife. So I don't know what you would call that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, she's here, and boy, she's really got her hair working in this. This time. This is later on after a mock time, somewhere down the road.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't know if Spock's not thinking, man, I chose poorly, because she's looking fine in this comic. Yeah. She looks very good. They have a whole conversation.
I like when he asks her, and how is Stun? And she says, Stun is Stun.
He is no better.
That's
or
all
worse
she can say about it.
And I had anticipated he would be when I chose him. Classic Vulcan answer. That's so much passion there.
He's done.
Exactly.
He's stonerific.
He's such a stoner. What I think is great, though, is that they have this great conversation. And she tells him, she says, you know, I know you, and you're not going to find peace here. You need to be out doing something that's who you are. You're not of Vulcan the way that basically I think she's saying you're not Stan. You're not going to stay here. You're not going to be Vulcan. You're going to go and you're going to be who you are. And that isn't here on this planet, and it's not really with the Kolinar purging of emotions.
The other thing I get from it is that Spock, he wants to deny who he really is, though, at this point in time, because she tells him, like you said, you will find no peace here, but you go out, and she says, whatever is out there that has driven you back to Vulcan, you should make your peace with it and return. And she tells him that you'll leave the same way you left me. But I think Spock keeps coming back to it. Like he's not at home on Vulcan, and he's something more. He's a combination between these two cultures, but he keeps coming back to Vulcan because he's determined. He refuses to let the human side out. Mm-hmm. And he keeps thinking, like, I can suppress this and I can be fully Vulcan. Maybe it's because he wants his father's approval. He wants Sarek's approval. But he keeps coming back. And T'Pring's just telling him, like, you got to quit doing this. You know, stop coming back here. This is not where you belong.
Yeah, exactly. So he finds his transport, and he tells the guy where they're going to go. It's Viridian. The guy says, that's fine. And, you know, it's not a dangerous place to be. And they get to the bridge of his little ship, and he begins to have a flashback to the Enterprise with Kirk and the rest of the gang.
Yeah. Now, his little ship, by the way,
is
an unmarked Federation runabout.
Exactly. And so we get to this flashback where Kirk and the crew are trying to save members of a Starfleet crew on another ship that's having some serious technical difficulties and is basically about to blow up at any moment. And the admiral on the ship is refusing to leave. And Bones and Spock basically like, we need to get out of here. If she's going to go on the ship, that's her business, basically. And Kirk's like, no, that is not how it's going to be. We're going to go over there and save her. In fact, I'm going to go over there and save her.
Yeah.
Classic now, Kirk.
When you see this admiral on the screen here, and Kirk says, oh, I know her. I know Patricia Carlson. She's stubborn. She'll go down with that ship. But then when they show her on the view screen, were you thinking at first that like some disease had struck the ship and this was like the deadly years again? Because we don't know what she normally looks like. And she looks so old and worn down right here. And then she says, what the hell? And of course, what the hell is referring to the fact that she's being held by Kirk. But I was thinking like, what the hell? She's looking in a mirror. I'm old.
Yeah, I did think that was really funny. It's kind of a strange like viewing of these three panels that come down and you finally get to her going, what the hell?
And then realize, oh no, that's what she always looks like.
Right.
Okay, there's no disease on the ship.
But I did think that this was great. You know, she talks about this idea of you know, that she had sent crew after crew basically to try and fix it and they kept dying and she you know, feels responsible in such a huge way and also feels like she doesn't deserve basically to be rescued and Kirk is able to talk her into coming with them.
Do you feel like that's a difference between her as a TOS era admiral and a TNG era badmiral? Because don't you think a badmiral would try to put the blame on someone else and hop into an escape pod and get away?
Yeah, a badmiral would kind of give you the middle finger and run to this nearest escape pod while making sure that they had neatly packed all of their belt buckles.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's exactly what would have happened. So, yeah, this is great. I love, Spock getting to see that this is again, how Kirk treats people that he knows, that he respects, that are valuable to him. And the idea that of the classic TOS moment of Kirk and Bones kind of, you know, ribbing Spock for, you know, oh, I'm sorry, Spock, were you caring about us? And of course, Bones getting, you can't have a heart attack if you don't have a heart.
I think what's important here for the comic, that the point of the comic is the comment that Spock makes to Kirk, though, which is that you risked much for her, Captain, because that is that other moment of realization, right? Like you were just saying, this is how Kirk handles things. But just Spock making that statement to him, you can feel like the pieces are slowly coming together in his head, right?
Well, and that idea, I think, is going to play out, obviously, in The Wrath of Khan for Spock, because he sees Kirk continually, even though Kirk cheats death all the time, Kirk is always putting himself on the line for others. I mean, and he is willingly putting himself in the line of fire to save others. He just is able to get out of it all the time.
You know, it's a good point about The Wrath of Khan, because we talk often how the comics and the books, but like Khan ruling in hell, we talked about this, where the comic can really fill in blanks that make the movie mean more to you when you watch it, even though you've seen it, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100 times. That's a good point here. That does lead to that scene in The Wrath of Khan where you wonder why Spock just stands up and goes and does that. But yeah, it's like a gradual process.
Definitely. And so then we get to the scene where Spock beams down to Verdian 3 and the letter is kind of replaying in his mind that he got from Picard. And it's a sad moment. God, we could go into a whole hour. I could complain about how dumb Generations is and Kirk dying. But the fact that he does die
Yeah.
And if there's only, if there's a one redeeming thing about Generations, I think was getting the character of Kirk. Like, they understood the character. Like, this guy would, of course he would do anything for the captain of the Enterprise who needed help. Course he would risk his life to save millions of people he doesn't know, because that's what Kirk did every day. That's who he was.
Right.
And I think that really plays out in this comic too, of Spock standing there and thinking about who he is, been reflecting this whole time about who he is, and just the kind of man that he is. He's risking his life to try and unify Vulcans and Romulans together. It's dangerous, and yet it's something that he really believes in. He knows is important, and how much they could learn from each other. And yeah, he's willing to put himself in the line of fire for what he believes mm-hmm. in. So I think that that's really cool.
Definitely. So we move into the final issue here. And what I think's cool that you realize when you get further into the fourth issue is you realize you learn more of what Spock did after that final panel of issue 3, where it says to be continued, and we see him up there, you know, overlooking the valley up there where Picard buried Kirk. Then in issue 4, we find out, you know, kind of what went on after that and what Spock's mission here is.
Yeah. So we get back to the ship that the captain
unmarked
of the ship,
Federation runabout.
Exactly, yeah. The unmarked Federation runabout. The captain asks him, you know, why are you doing this? It seems strangely sentimental for a Vulcan. Yeah. And you know, of course, honestly, it is. It's Kirk. It's Spock. And he begins to think about the TOS movie era, one of my favorite eras, and yeah. They are doing the Kobayashi Maru test, I guess, here.
Yeah, they are. This is before Wrath of Khan.
You're right. Yeah. They are doing the test, and so Savick, you know, messes it up again, and she walks out, and she gets on the turbo lift, and one of the crew members yells at her for doing everything wrong, and the fact that her solution could have killed, what is it? Let's see.
7 crew members dead in engineering. Those were his buddies. That's why he's upset. 123 crew members irradiated and 14 other casualties.
I mean, I guess if you're not all dead, though, not bad. Yeah. You know, it's the Kobayashi Maru. That seems like a pretty good... If it's a no-win scenario, that's not a bad deal.
Right.
You know?
Well, I'm concerned here now. 7 crew members dead, 123 crew members irradiated, 14 other casualties. They've separated that out from the crew members. Are those like the cleaning people in the hallways outside of the simulator room, or
pets,
what's going on there?
You know, pets.
Pets?
Yeah.
Okay, pets.
Archer had a dog, so other people have dogs or cats or whatever, so that's probably what it was. So she goes to talk to Spock, and he explains to her this idea that you know, for humans, things are about feeling. It really isn't about logic for so much of the time, and her not really understanding or getting that, and him kind of explaining to her slowly, this is how it's going to be. And it reminds me of the conversation he has with Valeris a little bit.
It does.
And kind of the genesis of that is here. And so they're going on their inspection tour of the Enterprise before Kirk gets there to make sure everything's in shape. And then there is a very random explosion there in engineering, which it seems strange to me.
I would be really concerned if the ship is there in space dock and they're just getting it ready to go on another mission, and this happened.
Yeah.
Like, who dropped the ball here?
Exactly. So there's an explosion, and Scotty's telling everybody to get out and not to get away. And so some crew members, you know, they have that big, huge door that comes down.
Yeah, the one they do barrel rolls underneath. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So in TOS, they have that huge door that comes down, and Spock is calling for transporter, and Scotty's little nephew, Peter, goes in and saves these guys before the door comes down and gets them out. And
Scotty told him not to go, though. Exactly. That's important to what Spock learns here, or what Savick learns, anyway.
And so as they're sitting in the medical bay, and Savick asks him, I don't understand, why is Scotty proud of his nephew now? He saved the people. That's great, but he disobeyed an order. I don't understand. And he says, self-sacrifice and loyalty to one's friends are not always logical. And I think it's that idea that Spock says to her, too, that this is a path, yours is going to be similar to mine. And it's a lifelong journey of trying to understand what this means to be with humans and to deal with humans. And kind of, I think, in a lot of ways, Spock coming to embrace his human side. And appreciate what comes from it. And then we get to the end, and I think it's really beautiful. The whole thing is that Spock has brought Kirk's body back to be buried on Earth. Very simple epitaph of Captain Diplomat Explorer on his tombstone. And he has a brief conversation with Picard, who shows up, which was nice that they have a nice conversation. And so I think in the end, for me, this is a great comic. It ends with Spock being back on Romulus and a little kid running up and saying he just finished the readings of Sirach. And he says, I'm sure you have a lot of questions then.
Yeah.
What I like about this comic, though, is really getting to see Spock's reaction to the death of his friend. And I also just kind of getting a picture of what it was like for Spock to learn to be more human in the end. And we have a lot of Spock in the original series and then in the movies. But kind of picking out some things to really pinpoint that, I thought really worked, because whereas that growth happens, there aren't a lot of things that you can like point to and say the series or whatever where Spock learns that, especially in TOS.
Right.
It's not really that kind of show. And then, of course, in the movies, they're moving Spock forward, but that really has less to do with a story through line than them kind of making the decision, we're going to do this with Spock. We're going to have a self-sacrifice and everything. So I thought this was a great way of giving you the opportunity to see just the impact that all of these different characters have had on him and making him more human, somebody who could say, you have been and always shall be my friend.
Yeah. I like that they chose moments to fill in those blanks. Like the only one that looks really familiar to us is the one with Savick and the Kobayashi Maru, but it's not the scene from the movie. It's one of her other attempts to pass the test. But then the other ones, they're giving us the flashback to his childhood, which is a new thing. They're following up Amok Time when he's with T'Pring. They're giving us that moment with Pike, something that we've never heard of before. And there, even the encounter with Chapel, that was, it's a familiar setting, TMP, but it's a new moment. So I like that it wasn't a recap of like, these are Spock's greatest hits. These are the moments that made him who he is, but it actually supplements everything that we saw. And therefore, next time you watch something with Spock starting from, well, really the motion picture, but the Wrath of Khan forward, it gives you it makes the view that you have of him and what's going on in the screen deeper.
Yeah, definitely. It's a great story. And I think, Spock is a character that has a lot going on and can definitely be explored more like this. And it, as a comic for the prequel of the Countdown series to the JJ movie, to where we get that Spock. I think that Spock is really that full culmination of everything that he's ever learned and ever been.
Right.
And yeah. if they did anything really, really right, honestly, in the JJ film, was, I think, the writing of Leonard Nimoy's Spock. I feel like they nailed it. And then, of course, you know, Nimoy playing him just crushed it. And so I think that all of that came off really well. And this was a great, you know, just kind of icing on a cake of really getting to look at this character. So I highly recommend it. I think it's really worth reading. I think it's got some amazing artwork in it, too, that really beautiful. It is nice to have a comic that is a little bit more thought-provoking and just kind of makes you sit back and think about a character than, you know, just a bunch of crazy action all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of the artwork, if you grab this, get the omnibus version that IDW has for... I have it on iPad. I'm sure you can get it for other things. But the omnibus version in the back, they have an art gallery. And they have all the cover art, you know, without any of the text on it or anything. It's really, really nice. You know, they've kind of gotten the habit in the digital ones now of only giving you one cover. They used to give you all the different covers at the front. Now they give you just one. But this has all of the different covers, artwork only in the back. So really, really nice. All right, Matthew. Well, I'm glad we talked about this today. I'm looking forward to going back and watching The Wrath of Khan, especially, and just kind of seeing that growth again. But it's not the only thing we've been talking about on the network this week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Hal Sutherland and the Animated Series.
I don't like the animated series. It's not good. However...
See, that's the kind of stuff that makes me forget about it. Would you rather me watch Deep Space Nine or the animated series?
Okay, but now that you're
done... We made that choice.
Now that you're done with Deep Space Nine, you can move on to the animated series.
Earl Grey.
TNG Reboot.
I have a lot of problems with this concept of let's just do the next generation. I don't think it's possible. To me, a big part of Star Trek is like this aspect of exploration and finding out the unknown and going out places we've never been.
The Ready Room.
The Wire.
He's basically becoming a good Federation citizen, and that's causing a huge amount of conflict. And maybe even before he was here, that's what got him here, is that his inner ideals made him a bad Cardassian.
The Orb.
Esri Dax.
Which to me, she really seems like, you know, that boy or girl now who's gotten out of college, is living at home again and not really sure what they want to do with their life because nothing's turning out the way they thought it was going to. Which is funny because her character is actually more relevant now than it was then.
To the journey!
Voyager Season 3 Marathon.
Being a child of the 90s, and I hadn't watched this in a while, I realized, oh my gosh, how things had changed and how things hadn't changed. Rainn Robbins is... gigantic cell phone with the huge antenna and her hippie van, the lava lamp. I mean, I just loved it all. It was very groovy.
Warp 5.
Enterprise Season 5.
Well, they could find, I mean, more excitement in the decon chamber with this whole trip Trantipole love triangle thing for sure.
Yeah, an Andorian fight scene in the decon chamber. Think about it.
Wow.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Robert Hewitt Wolf, Andromeda.
I suppose the easiest way to describe them would be a bat, who lead living hosts for their young.
They're kind of like I'm going to say xenomorphs in Alien, even though Max would kill me for saying that.
Yes, and I dare say he will when he listens.
Literary Treks.
Protectors with Kirsten Viner.
Again, it's just you look at realistically as you possibly can. You know, coming that close to death, being in the two continuum, I mean, what's that going to do to someone? And I struggled for a long time figuring out how to have her, again, realistically work through all of those things.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week. And some days we even have two shows for you. And you'll find them in a wide variety of places, including on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox Zune, or you can download or stream from the website. So go grab some shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. If you'd like to share your thoughts on Spock or Spock Reflections, or if you'd like to judge a book by its cover and let us know what you think about the new Titan artwork, you can do that by going to our website at trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose Literary Treks, and that will come to us by email. And you can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners. And then in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter, where we're always tweeting away about Star Trek under username trekfm. Now, Matthew, when you're not having flashbacks to the greatest moments of your own life, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me at MattRushing02. That's my Twitter account there. And tweeting about all sorts of different things like, Star Trek, anything else that you can think of. I did go to a convention recently and meet, just kind of the love of my life. That was a big deal. So anything like that. Also, you can find me doing The Orb with you about Deep Space Nine. We talk about that the whole time on the show. And I think this week, as we proved, we can talk about anything in Deep Space Nine for quite a long time, because we talked about runabouts.
If you want to hear more about this Aliens Unmarked Federation runabout, go listen to The Orb. Because, when this show drops, you'll still need to wait till Wednesday for that episode of The Orb to come out. But yeah, we really went in depth into that unmarked Federation runabout.
It bothered us. What can we say? that somebody could just get an unmarked Federation runabout. Right. I probably got it through.
We'll tell you where you can get your own
dealer, you can check me out on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you are not trying to get away from annoying Saurian people who are bothering you on your commute through Tokyo, where can we find you?
Well, I've learned to put up with them, because the Saurians, they make some of the best brandy you're going to find anywhere.
That is very true. They really do.
Yeah. So they're good to drink with, but... When I'm not doing that, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, besides doing The Orb with Matthew, you can find me on The Ready Room, joined by hosts from all over the network every week and special guests. And we talk about Star Trek news and all 5 live-action Star Trek series. Matthew, the latest episode of The Ready Room that Shar and I did last week, we have a whole Spock thing in there too. Spock riding a unicorn, which is a real painting.
Yes, you do. It worried me that somebody had created this painting.
Yes.
I listened to the show and I was quite disturbed.
What worried me more isn't that someone created this painting. It's that it was commissioned by Men's Health magazine.
What is going on at that magazine?
I don't know what that's about, so we'll find out. But you can find me on there, and then you can also find me on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise, and I have my own interview show as well called Matterstream. So check out all of those and find out what we're talking about. Before we let you go, we'd also like to ask you to please support our sponsor for this week's show, and that's Audible.com. Audible helps us bring Literary Treks to you every week. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, as we talked about during news. You can get the Vulcan Soul trilogy, whatever you want to get. Go pick it up. Just try Audible for 30 days. If you decide not to stick with it at the end of the trial, you get to keep that audiobook, so there's nothing to lose. And you can get that by going to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up. And we really thank Audible for supporting the show, and of course, thank you for supporting Audible, getting some great audiobooks in the process. Also, if you'd like to help us keep the show coming to you, there's another thing that you can do, and that is make a donation to the network. These shows are free for you guys to download, of course, but they're not free for us to produce or distribute. And you can help out by going to trek.fm/donate. We have different levels of contributions for you to choose from. And also, as a thank you, we have original alien illustrations by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on the website. You can mix and match if you want those as badges or as art prints, and just let us know which aliens you like. Again, that's trek.fm/donate, and we really thank you for helping us keep the network going.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and until next time, live long and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.